Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
For today and next week, Richard and I are going to be emptying our mailbag and answering a lot of listener questions. Keep in mind that we're not interested in answering every one of your questions. We get some like, what's your most profitable place to play and why? That one isn't going to make the cut. We're both working professionals, and being totally transparent has never been one of our goals. Also, there are some tax questions and questions about who to bet on the Mayweather-McGregor fight. These are good questions, but they're outside of our expertise, so we're skipping them.
Although it's a good reminder, we should probably have Russell Fox on again to talk about tax issues.
Agreed. We receive questions at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com and also the gamblingwithanedge.com website. Those two places sound the same, but they're not. One is a website, one is an email address. They're not related to each other. We also got questions from Twitter and the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page, and a lot from the Wizard of Vegas website. Thanks a lot for all your questions. Before we get to those questions, in the news, the United States Supreme Court announced that it was going to take a look at the New Jersey decision allowing states other than Nevada, Delaware, and Montana to have sports betting. What surprised me was that Las Vegas bookmakers were generally in favor of this. Why this surprises me is basically Nevada has a monopoly on legal sports betting. A significant number of sports patrons come to Vegas specifically for this purpose. If they could go to their local casino, that would cut way back on Vegas visitors. So why would casino bookmakers be in favor of this? It turns out that most of the casinos that have sportsbook also have casinos in different jurisdictions. So I guess they figure that whatever they lose in the Nevada casinos, they'll pick up elsewhere. Still, it's a surprise to me. Richard?
Yeah, not to me, because, yes, maybe a few people will not travel as much, but think of all the other customers that don't travel to Vegas to make those sports bets and now are going to make them in those local venues. So, you know, and plus, even if you don't have a casino in that venue, when that state decides to bring in sports betting, who are they going to look to give the franchise to? Someone that's already doing it. So I think the casinos are thinking, and probably rightly so, that they're going to be first in line to actually get the opportunity to book those bets. I think if it becomes a federal opening, a federal law, it will not be as great for the players as if every state is going to make up their own rules. That would give the opportunity for independent operators and then possibly some, you know, skewed lines where advantage players may have an edge.
Yeah, I don't think this is about federal jurisdiction. This is pretty much a states' rights issue. And the question is, are states allowed to accept these wagers? I'm pretty sure that's what the case is all about.
Yes, right. But you know that the AGA is pushing for an opening of sports betting across the country. So if the Supreme Court were to allow this, it wouldn't surprise me if very quickly Congress passed a law just making it legal.
I'm going to, any law that you can move that this Congress is going to pass quickly, I'm going to take the under on. But I digress. Let's go on. We got a question. It says, I'm a profitable 2-5 poker player who in 12 months going to retire. I want to supplement my income with monthly trips to Las Vegas. I have a Total Rewards Visa and several year history playing mostly poker at Caesars properties. My question is, as a poker player, how can I ensure comp rooms for 4 or 5 day stays about every month or 6 weeks? I run as much through the Visa as I can, but I don't play slots. I'm open to learning blackjack basic strategy and flat betting quarters or whatever if I have to, but would rather not. Can a person approach an in-house host or independent host and ask bluntly? Can small-timers even approach a host? Should I manufacture spending on the Visa? Or is $50, 50 hours of poker every couple months enough? All right, my answer to this is it's a great question. Unfortunately, I don't have a great answer. My experience in the Caesars system is as a video poker player, where the rules are more cut and dried. Yes, you can talk to a host, and the poker rooms themselves will have hosts who are familiar with this sort of request. You can also talk to the other players. Surely others are in the same boat and have some experience along with handling it. Finally, you can post your question on a poker bulletin board. There's a number of them out there. 2+2 comes to mind, but there are others where most of the participants are more knowledgeable on this than we are.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, I'm surprised that he already is getting comped rooms a couple of times a year simply for his poker action. I had several friends in Los Angeles that would come to Vegas to play poker, and usually they would only get a casino rate. Learning to play basic strategy, blackjack, and betting quarters at a Caesars property is not going to be enough to get you rooms. But I would say it's definitely, if you don't mind not staying at a Caesars property, it would definitely be worth your time to learn to play some video poker, because it's very easy to get comped rooms, especially at the Boyd properties, you know, like the Orleans or the Gold Coast. You could learn to play some video poker where you're playing really with no house advantage, and with just a couple of hours play, probably get sent mailers that would offer you rooms all the time. So, and if you want rooms that are a little bit nicer than that, you know, then I would upgrade to the station properties where you could stay at Green Valley Ranch or Red Rock Canyon. And again, for not a big time investment in terms of your video poker play, you should be able to earn rooms pretty easily.
Those two station properties you mentioned have a distance factor from the Caesars properties on the Strip. Whereas Palace Station is fairly close. It's a pretty junky place.
Yeah. Although they're doing a big remodel, so maybe it'll get better.
Now, Palms is now a station property.
Oh, yeah.
They still have 9-6 jacks, and that's less than a mile from the Caesars poker rooms.
Right, and actually right across the street if you want to go to the Rio, where the World Series of Poker is going on right now. So.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
All right, next question. I'm a 9-6 jacks or better moderate player. I'm not sure, it only seems this way to me, but when I hold cards and hit the deal button, the first new card seems to be the same rank as the discarded card, like the 7 of hearts for the 7 of spades, very often. Is this just my imagination?
Of course not. Of course they do that. I've had people say, not only do they get the same rank, it's the same card. I threw away the 7 of hearts and I got the 7 of hearts back. No, you didn't. Your memory's not as good as you think it is.
You're certainly not the first player to be concerned about this. I'm convinced the machines are not biased in this way, but others swear otherwise. I tested it years ago, back in the late 1990s, and collected data on 10,000 one-card draws. If I throw away the 7 of hearts, like you suggest, there are 3 different 7s I could draw to fill in. In the 10,000 trials, there should have been 638 cases of the same rank card filling in. In my test, there were 635. close enough to be spot on? Is 10,000 trials long enough to be significantly – say that again. Is 10,000 trials long enough to be statistically significant? Probably not. Am I planning on doing more trials? Definitely not. With my a priori bias that the games were fair, based on my ability for years to support myself using this assumption, this was confirmation enough for me for this particular thing. Whether it would convince others or not was not my concern. And even if I tested on this one generation of machine, that result may or may not translate over to another generation of machines or different manufacturer. Periodically, manufacturers change random number generators. I believe that people tend to see what they want to see. Whenever another 7 pops up, they go, see, it really happens a lot. And when a 7 doesn't pop up, they go, well, it doesn't happen every time. Me, I don't even look for it anymore, especially on triple play through 100-play versions. I could just see somebody doing that on 100-play on every one-card draw. That would be interesting.
You know, we're going to return to this idea a lot, I think, today. And, you know, our human brains are hardwired to look for patterns, right? So we look for these patterns as a way to try to explain things. So when we see the card we threw away, the same rank, turn up a lot, it's a pattern. And we try to, you know, give ourselves an explanation that they must be cheating or whatever, especially if we're losing. It doesn't bother us at all if we're winning. So people get fooled by randomness all the time. And I, too, believe that the machines in Nevada are on the square. I believe that, you know, the vast majority of machines in the United States are on the square. And I wouldn't worry about it. Just as a side note, you know, this happens to all of us, right? And we think when we lose, they could be cheating. When we win, well, we're just smart. And, you know, back over 10 years ago, my partner and I were playing a lot of online casinos. And he, more so than I, was always very worried that they could be cheating, right? Because they're online. They're some guy in Costa Rica. How do you know if they're not cheating or whatever? And I remember one time specifically, we had literally put hundreds of millions of dollars in action through all these different casinos. And we looked at our data and found that we were very slightly ahead of expectation on our bets on the tape. And I, you know, I said, look, you know, we're ahead of expectation after all of this time, all of these bets, and we're ahead. And he's like, yeah, but how do we know this place over here isn't the one that's cheating? You know, the other places are fine, but maybe that one is. So anyway, yeah, it's human nature. Try not to worry about it.
I'm going to take a somewhat contrarian view to what you just said. And that is, all of us should be on the lookout for being cheated in various ways. It can happen. It does happen. Not very often. People make much of it in casinos is the casinos making a mistake rather than an intentional something. So being on the alert for this is one thing, but test it.
Yeah,
if
no,
you really
I would agree with you. It is something, especially even more so in blackjack. You know, it's much harder for a casino to rig a video poker machine than it is a blackjack shoe.
That's true. All right, let's move on. Somebody asked us, let's say that a person plays under an alias and does not want to give the casino his social security number or real name. We're talking about table games, not slots of video poker that issue W2G forms. That person wins a tournament prize that pay cash that will lead to the 1099. is there a way to get the casino to pay in free play? Does it hurt to ask? And what are the chances they would do that? Any prior experience with this? Richard?
Well, yeah, absolutely you can ask. You can always ask. I would say your chance of getting away with that, close to zero. And part of the problem is the U.S. government is putting so much heat on the casinos over this know your customer and reporting all the cash transaction stuff. So, and most often I have seen where the people at the casino don't really understand the rules themselves or the laws themselves. So they're just trying to cover their ass. And even in situations where they do not need to file the paperwork, they're doing it anyway. Even when you try to explain to them why they don't have to and why you don't need to give them your ID. But they just are going to do it anyway. So, as I say, you can try. You can offer to take a check. You know, but even then, they're going to want to see your ID. They just are. And if this is a real issue, you know, I have a friend who plays carnival games who will not give up his name or his ID with good reason. And he has, on more than one occasion, gotten a royal flush on a carnival game and calmly thrown it into the muck. He literally has thrown $25,000 payout into the muck because he is unwilling to give up his name. I mean, and because if they got his name, you know, he would never be able to play in that casino again. So, you know.
Or any other casino, because they would recognize that name. And,
So, you know, are you willing to do that? Is that how much, you know, your name is worth to you? I mean, there are very few players, I think, in the world where that's true. But for some of them, it is. And that is how they handle it. So.
And coattail on this, this particular player Rich is talking about would not enter a tournament.
No.
Where he could get a prize that would cause that. There's no room for positive EV there. He loses his buy-in, or he has to give up his name, and there's just no good result possible. So if giving up your name is that important, don't enter tournaments.
Right.
All right. Moving on. I'm starting to become more involved and engrossed with the mathematics of gambling, and I wanted to pose a question about the general high-low counting strategy in blackjack. What kind of impact would labeling the sevens as plus one and the nines as minus one have? It would make a tiny bit more taxing to count, but I would consider nines being moderately more valuable than sevens from a player perspective. All yours, Richard.
Okay, so first of all, you should realize that blackjack and the solving of blackjack is an old game, and it's been solved many, many, many times, right? So it's been around over, I mean, the card counting has been around over 50 years, and every one of these ideas that you have, someone has already thought of and thoroughly analyzed. So the count that you're talking about, where you count sevens as plus one along with two through six, and nines as minus one along with tens and aces, was originally called the Silver Fox count. And there was a guy named Ralph Stricker who was a big proponent of it. It's a perfectly fine count. There's nothing wrong with it. And you can use it. As I've said many times on the show, what count you use is really not important, as long as you can do it perfectly. So if you already know the high-low, I would stick with the high-low. You're not going to get any material gain by switching to the Silver Fox. So, yeah, you can do it if you want, but there's really no reason to. You know, the money in counting cards is in how deep does the penetration go. and how fast does the dealer deal? How many hands per hour are they giving you? And how big is your spread? And the rest of it, you know, is all really not that important.
And how long can you last before they kick you out?
Well, that too, yes, that is the most important.
All right. Never thought I would correct Richard on a blackjack question. Okay, good. New question. How do you get heat with a slot machine if it's all controlled by computers? There's a difference between video poker machines and slot machines. In video poker, most casinos set their reimbursement schedule assuming the player doesn't play close to perfectly. If he does play better than their assumption, casinos simply say, "You're too good for us," and they restrict him somehow. Also, in video poker, big jackpots are fairly rare. If you're over-roiled on big enough machines, it looks to the casino like you're simply too good. $5 machines cost $20,000 royals. Get a couple extra of those, and they get really nervous. Whether it's because you have these magical skills or just on the right side of variance, the casino doesn't want to risk finding out for sure. Sometimes there's a rare jackpot with a bonus, perhaps a dealt 10 play dollar royal on double super times pay with a 20 times multiplier for $800,000. That'll scare the hell out of a casino, and they'll decide very quickly to get you out of there. On slot machines, there is some skill determining when progressives are playable. If you get good enough at this, you'll be hitting more than your share of the jackpots and keeping them away from the regular player who won't like it. If enough losing players complain, casinos will take action. Spreading your action among several casinos will disguise your expertise, but eventually they'll figure it out.
Yeah, so I would also say that because casinos are now owned by corporations, there is no downside for a boss to throw a player out. Even if the guy was a losing player mathematically, if the guy wins a bunch of money and the boss throws him out because he won a bunch of money, he's never going to get in trouble for that. But in the rare situation where the player actually was a professional and the boss doesn't throw him out, the boss could lose his job. So nowadays, so many of the bosses and the surveillance people really don't understand the games. They just know they're supposed to win. So anybody who is winning, they think something must be wrong. I don't know what it is, but we should just throw the guy out. Can't hurt. So often that'll be the case. And they'll do it on slot machines. They'll do it on roulette. They'll do it on a guy playing a continuous shuffling machine on the blackjack table. It doesn't matter. You know, we had a guy on our show a few years ago who got thrown out for playing craps because they, you know, thought he was able to control the dice. He ended up losing almost $1 million at the casinos that were smart enough not to throw him out. But, so that's it. It doesn't make any sense. In the old days when the guy who owned the casino made the decisions, where the money that he might be winning is actually going in his own pocket, well, they made much, much better decisions about those kind of things.
Okay, we have a follow-up question from the same guy dealing with blackjack shuffling machines. He says, "I know a lot of times if they suspect I'm counting, they'll turn the algorithm on and clump the tens together and clump the aces with neutral cards so the true count always stays between -1 and -5. What do you do about this?"
Yeah, well, they push the magic button. So this is what we were talking about before in the video poker, that this is somebody who is looking for patterns and he starts losing and he notices the count doesn't go up. And look, if you're playing a six-deck game with a two-deck cut, I mean, five out of six shoes are going to remain negative. You know, that just they do not have a magic button that can make the shuffling machine cheat you. It just doesn't exist. So, yeah. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. We got a question. This is from a young lady. She says she's in her mid-30s, and through a combination of professional success and frugality, she's in a lucky position to hopefully be able to retire in the next 5 to 7 years. At that point, her retirement fund should be able to support a comfortable but modest lifestyle. One of the things she's considering for post-retirement is taking up more serious video poker playing to supplement my entertainment and travel costs. She'll be focused on the value gained from hotel dining, entertainment, and travel comps more than she suspects normal pros would be. She's taking a number of steps to explore this possibility, including upgrading her video poker skills, slowly adding new games to her skill set, learning from the incredible resources out there. Thank you very much. Scheduling some grind trips to learn her limits and tolerance, or about length of play, that type of thing. After retirement, she'll be moving to a new city to be close to family that has a number of casinos in the vicinity that she'll be able to play from her home base. She'd like to be on the road 3 or 4 months a year, gambling and living off comps as much as possible. She's going to be saving her initial bankroll over the next few years while still generating a steady income, but she hasn't quite figured out what the target bankroll should be. What initial bankroll would I recommend for this endeavor? Okay, this is a complicated question. But I don't know that any amount of bankroll will be enough. Every casino location is different, i.e. Vegas is not the same as Atlantic City, which is different from Reno or Tunica, blah, blah, blah. In each one of these locales, there are going to be more players trying very hard to make it than are there going to be successful players. Most of the people who are trying to do what she says she wants to do are net losers. Will she be one of the successful ones? I don't know. The only way to find out for sure is to try it. It might be much more difficult than she hypothesizes. And she's talking about 5 to 7 years down the road. I can say without a doubt that the scene in Vegas is much, much more difficult than it was 5 to 7 years ago. And I predict in another 5 to 7 years, it's going to be tougher yet. I'm optimistic that I'm going to find an avenue for success in that environment, but I don't know for sure. If I can't be sure about me, I certainly can't be sure about her. That sounds egotistical, and maybe it is, but that's not the way I meant it. I have reasonable estimates about my own skill sets. I have no solid information about hers. We'll just have to see. Video poker players are retiring right and left because the profits just aren't there as much as they used to be. Every casino is kicking out some players, or at least no mailing them. If you're close to a full-time player and successful, you're going to be kicked out at some of the places some of the time. You say you're learning new games. That's good. But I have no idea what games will be profitable 5 to 7 years down the road. Questions about bankroll, and I can't answer that. All I can say is more is better than less. Have a backup retirement plan in case this one goes south, because there's a significant probability that it will.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, I think it's a great way to retire. And it doesn't sound like she's trying to earn an income. It just sounds like she's trying to be able to, you know, stay for free and eat at great places and see shows. And to me, you know, it's really more comp hustling than trying to earn actual money. And as I say, I think that's a great way to retire. Yeah, I agree. 5 to 7 years from now, who knows what it's going to be like. But I think it's a good plan. If you haven't read Max Rubin's book, Comp City, I would definitely read that because that will aid you and you might be able to add blackjack or craps to your repertoire as a way of, you know, of doing this. As for bankroll, boy, yeah, again, it's really hard to say. You know, if you had 100,000, I think that'd be great. You could probably do really well with a $100,000 bankroll. I mean, stay at really nice places and, you know, get full comps and all that kind of stuff. Now, you're going to be playing a losing game, you know, but if you do it right, what you're losing is going to be far, far less than the value of those hotel rooms and food and shows, etc.
That's true. But losing $1,000 a week, even getting more benefit of that in terms of rooms and food, she's doing that 3 months a year. She's going to be broke in a few years on $100,000. You need to be playing even $100,000 isn't very much if you're it's going to last you 50 years. She's mid-30s, so let's say she's 40 when she does it. She's got, hopefully for her, more than 50 years left, and $100,000 bankroll isn't all that much.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, and I'm assuming that's just gambling. Yeah, and I would think she'd be able to play at least break even. I mean, or close to break even. I mean, the casinos are going to send her something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes, they will.
So.
All right.
So, like everything, the answer is, it depends.
Yeah, and also, if she's motivated, my skepticism won't be a red light.
Yeah.
If she's not motivated enough to do it, my skepticism will be a red light, which is probably just as well.
Yeah.
If she's confident enough and works hard enough to run through the red light, good luck to her.
And you know what I would say is before you're retired, while you're still working, make some trips out here to Vegas and you know, put in some time playing. You can start small, like we talked about before, at a place like the Palms or the Orleans or whatever, and get some experience playing, earning those comps, coming and staying in free rooms, you know, and make sure that is the lifestyle that you thought it was going to be, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was part of her plan. That was actually part of her plan that she laid out. So
yeah.
She's right with you on that one. Let's move on. Richard, what's the longest you got away with a play at a casino?
I guess off the top of my head, the answer is 3.5 years. There was a casino in Seoul that had a game that was advantage off the top that I started playing in 1986. I was playing on a very large team at the time. We you know, at one point a few years later, we had money on 4 continents in 6 different currencies. But we realized that at that time, this was before the Japanese economy collapsed, and so the majority of players in that casino were just betting huge amounts of money, and they were all Japanese. And so we used Japanese as our big players, and we lasted 3.5 years. So, yeah, that's the longest.
Yeah, I don't know how to – I don't think he was asking about video poker. But it's possible to play positive video poker for longer than that. But – The rate you can earn at video poker is not the same as the rate you can earn at the game Richard was talking about. You know, if you're talking about earning, you know, $60,000 a month or more, the longest I was able to do it was year and a half, and that I'll talk about that later. But generally, you can last longer at video poker, but you can't earn as much while you're doing it. All right.
And I should say, you know, yeah, we lasted 3.5 years, but, you know, there were many of us switching out in and out all of the time. You know what I mean? So I wasn't in there 5 days a week for 3.5 years, but somebody on my team, we were constantly switching and constantly different Japanese big players were playing. So, you know, I would have no idea about a specific casino, how long I may have lasted in one casino, just sort of counting cards or something. I don't know.
All right. This one is about blackjack. He said he was recently playing a 6-deck game at a corporate-owned casino in Indiana. He was counting cards and started to notice there were more fives than there should have been. At one point, he counted out 50 of them, which is a lot in a 6-deck game. Another player noticed as well. He mentioned what he had seen to the floor supervisor and asked if the cards were checked prior to being inserted into the shuffle machine. They say they do not sort or check the cards, that they come from the manufacturer pre-sorted, and they just take them out of the box and put them in. Player said it was crazy and asked to see the card. Floor supervisor said no after making a call. The player asked for gaming to get involved. The staff got nervous, but when gaming showed up, they told me that gaming doesn't care and that the casino can do whatever it wants. They said, I must be losing and I'm just mad about that. I told gaming that I believe the casinos cheated the players, to which gaming said, that's not their problem. I asked them what the hell they're around there for. So, Richard, he wants to know, is he crazy and did he handle this wrong?
You know, this story is horrifying to me. And you have to understand, well, first of all, I really am curious whether this happened on a 6-deck shoe or if this happened on a CSM. Because on a CSM, well, the cards are constantly fed back in, and this could be a case of fooled by randomness like we were talking about before, where people start noticing patterns. But regardless, I mean, even if it was a CSM, the response from the gaming officer is horrifying to me. But you do have to realize that people come up with these ideas, like our earlier questions that we had already commented on, and they think everything is something that it's not, and everybody is cheating. But still, the fact that the cards are not checked and the gaming officer saying the casino can do whatever it wants, and our listener said that those were his exact words, that is really, really messed up. So, yes, you did the right thing, but obviously you got no satisfaction. I would go to the press. And well, here's the other thing. If this happened in a shoe, then every shoe should end at like plus 25 when you get to the cut card. And if that happens 4 or 5 times in a row, you can be pretty sure that, yeah, the cards are screwed up. Anyway, I would go to the press. I would try to find somebody in the press who was interested in the story and try to duplicate it. That's the problem. If you go back to the casino and you have no way of showing the reporter that, yes, this is what's happening, well, there's just nothing you can do. So, anyway, that would be my, you know, that would be my plan to move forward is to try to involve the press in some way. But, yeah, horrifying story.
Yeah, I don't, assuming in a 6-deck shoe more than 4 decks were dealt out, that's 16 fives. And if he's saying he found 3 times that many, that's kind of noticeable.
Yeah.
Okay. We are going to take a commercial break. Our first question after the break, it deals with a racial stereotype I'm not totally comfortable with, but it's an important part of the question, so we're going to deal with it. So that will be coming up after the commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Each week in July, Monday through Thursday, if you play 1,250 points in slots, reels, or video poker, you earn a copper gift. Red copper brand. The pans are ceramic-infused copper. Earn all four of the gifts, three frying pans and a skillet, from July 31st to August 3rd, and you can pick up a five-piece red copper square pan set for no extra play the following week. In all cases, you keep the points. Looking on the internet, the first four pans are worth about $20, and the last one is worth close to $60 that you get for free. Starting in July, every Monday is Prime Monday, where Prime is the name of their sexy seniors 50 years of age and older. It includes the senior slot tournaments, half-off dinner when you pay with points, $4 movies, and half-off bingo. On Tuesday, July 4th, from 8 a.m. through midnight, a total of 320 players will receive $100 in free slot play, an average of 20 players per hour in a hot seat program. The next semester of free video poker class at the South Point will be on Wednesday, August 2nd, beginning at noon. Schedules posted on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Ultimate X Bonus Streak. This is a 10 coins per line game where you earn multipliers for the next hand based on whether or not you scored this hand. Unlike regular Ultimate X, in this game, you earn a stream of multipliers for the next 3, 4, or 5 hands. The multipliers are harder to get. In Double Double Bonus, for example, instead of getting the multipliers for high pairs and higher, instead you get it for 3 of a kind and higher. Using regular Double Double Bonus strategy, on regular Ultimate X, you get multipliers 45% of the time, and in Ultimate X Bonus Streak, you get multipliers 12% of the time. This is where how they can afford to give you these multipliers 3 or 4 hands in a row. According to the WizardOfOdds.com site, none of the pay schedules offered for this game return as much as 99%. So working out a complex strategy for a game that returns so little is probably not something many of our listeners are planning to do. All right. We're back to questions. The question is, what's a great way to keep Asian ploppies from following you around the casino from table to table because they think you're Mr. Lucky? Richard.
Well, I have experienced this. And so have many of my teammates. And it's a problem because some of the times we are playing in a manner that they are kind of right. Like if they get on our table, they are more likely to win. And not only that, they sometimes figure out what it is we're doing. And that's also really bad. So this is actually a very real problem. You can do things like play into their superstitions so that, when they sit down, if they win the hand, you switch to two hands. hoping that they now lose the next one, so they'll blame you. If you play two hands and they win a hand, you switch back to one. You sit out and jump in and hit 15 against a 6. You do anything you can to play into their superstitions and make them now think you're Mr. Unlucky so that they'll get up and leave. The best thing to do is just shut them out from the table. Take all the available spots. If you're playing by yourself, you can't really do that. And if sometimes you can just wait them out, you know, just if you're patient enough, just bet small and play with no edge until they get tired of it and leave. But if it's somebody that hangs around the casino day in and day out and they see you in there often enough and see you win often enough, they are going to start following you around. You know, I mentioned that game we played for 3.5 years in Korea. The reason that we finally got barred was one of the degenerate players realized that our Japanese big players, there was always some white guy sitting on the table. And the Japanese player was in the restaurant, and this guy came up to him and said, you know, oh, I see. How are you and your American friends doing? And our BP denied that he knew what the guy was talking about, said he had no American friends. And basically the guy tried to extort money from our BP. And he said, you know, if you don't give me money, I really need to borrow money to play because I lost all my money. And if you don't give me money, I'm going to tell the casino what you guys are doing. And, you know, we refused to pay the guy, of course, and the guy did. He went and told the casino that it was the American on first base that was, you know, running everything, and that's how that game ended up ending. So, yeah, it is a real problem. If you can, I would just not play with an edge when they're at the table. Find a way to try whatever you have to get rid of them.
Interesting. Having never played in Asia, I've never experienced this.
Well, this, I mean, this happens here in America, too. You know, I mean, you know, it happens at the crap table, but nobody cares, right? Like, if there's a guy who's rolling a lot of passes on the crap table, well, yeah, everybody starts betting the way that guy's betting, you know? It happens on roulette as well. But it doesn't matter to those people. It only matters when you're playing with an edge, and then suddenly, you know, and because then they start telling their friends, "Oh, I play with that guy. He knows how to win." You know.
All right. Got another question. This one actually came from Twitter. It asked, "Why are there only machines in the Las Vegas airport? Why are there no table games or sports betting?" So the slot machines at the airport are run by a company owned by Michael Gaughan, who also owns the South Point, one of the sponsors of our show. So I put this question to him. His response was, and I quote, "Table games are too expensive for me to operate under my airport agreement. Sports books are also an expense problem and a gaming regulation nightmare. I have 18 different locations in the 4 terminals. I have looked at both many times over the past 27 years. It doesn't pencil." So that's why, a business decision by the guy who runs the operation. Thank you, Mr. Gaughan.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and if he had those, you know, William Hill has those kiosks where you can make a bet. And because I too thought, oh, it'd be a staffing nightmare and the employees would have to go through TSA and all that. But, yeah, if he had those sports betting kiosks, that might be easier. But as he says, it's a regulations nightmare. So, yeah, that probably puts the kibosh on that idea.
Well, and the South Point has its own sports book, and they're in competition with William Hill. So somehow it would be a big surprise to me if the owner of the South Point decided to use a different sports book.
No, I meant if they could create their own kiosk. Because I think if you put a sports betting kiosk in the airport, I think it would get action. You know, people leap flying out on Sunday and want to make that last bet on a football game or whatever.
I'm pretty sure it would. Okay, another question. This is addressed to Richard and me, although more to Richard. It says, do you guys have any hobbies other than the dancing for Mr. Dancer? Do you guys play games not at an advantage, like pool, golfing, ping pong, etc.? What are your hobbies? Richard, you first.
I play a lot of games. You know, on my phone, I play chess, backgammon, words with friends, and yeah, I'm saying it, Pokemon Go. you know, and those are really a daily thing for me. Mostly speed chess, as I say, backgammon, words with friends. I used to play more ping pong, but it seems like the players all haven't been coming to town. Ever since Caesars Entertainment, you know, kind of crashed their cashback program, a lot of guys are not coming to Vegas as much, so I just don't seem to have any players who want to play ping pong these days. I also am interested in photography, so, you know, I'll go out and shoot periodically. And I do theater, you know, I still do some plays now and then. So, that's pretty much it for me, I guess.
Huh, so he really doesn't want to hear about square dancing, huh? Go figure.
Well, he knows you're dancing, but are you doing anything else?
Well, I started going to a Toastmasters group to learn how to speak better. I probably should have done it before I started my radio and teaching career, but better late than never, and it's never too late to improve. I belong to a storytelling group where once a month we get together and tell stories. I enjoy that. I don't play chess online, but I do. There's a website called Extreme Sudoku, which are really tough ones, and I enjoy doing those, just keeping the mind active. As a player, I get 3 or 4 weeks of a year of cruising, and Bonnie and I enjoy that. So that's what we do. Okay, a question for Richard. Can you talk about how to simulate table games, what your educational background is, and how do you find out if a new carnival game is being offered in a new casino?
Okay, so, well, first of all, my educational background, my degree was in theater, so it has absolutely
nothing to do with it. That's kind of related to carnival.
Yeah. You sometimes have to do some acting in the casino. I do not simulate anything. You know, I have friends and teammates who are very, very good at that kind of thing. So if a game needs to be analyzed, that's their department. You know, any good team has people that have different skill sets. And that skill set is not mine. So, you know, as I say, I have somebody else who can do that for me. And as far as how you find the games, there's only one way to find the games, and that's to scout. You know, you just have to go out there. And now, you can do some cyber scouting by looking at the websites of the various casinos. Sometimes they will announce when they're getting a new game. And you can also look at the game manufacturers' websites. So they will sometimes list new games that they have, and sometimes they will tell you what casinos they've placed those games in. So, you know, that's it, scouting. And you can read also, you know, like Wizard of Vegas, things like that. Periodically, people will post, hey, they put this new game in, does anybody know anything about it? Often you're wishing they hadn't put that post up, but hey, sometimes you find something, and sometimes somebody ruins something for you. So it all works out, I think.
And sometimes you do the scouting, and sometimes somebody else does the scouting.
Yeah.
All right. They also same guy wants to know what percentage of your play is in the United States versus outside the United States.
Well, I'm mostly retired now. So, you know, I really am not traveling much at all anymore. You know, especially once I had kids, I tried to travel outside the United States a lot less. I mean, I still did it somewhat, I really haven't been traveling much outside the U.S. So, I'm not playing that much at all anymore anyway. Sort of enjoying Vegas, so.
All right, this guy's last question is, and I wouldn't blame you if you didn't answer it, what is your favorite casino in the United States and why?
Well, he also asked about the world, so I think in the world it would probably be that casino in Seoul that we played for 3.5 years.
40 years ago.
Yeah, right. 30 years ago. Favorite casino in the U.S.? I really don't think I have any favorite in the U.S. I mean, if I were going to stay at a casino, I think the Venetian has the nicest rooms I've stayed in. I mean, not counting a suite, but just like the regular room. But as far as, you know, like where I won a lot of money or things like that, I don't really pay attention to that. I have a lot of fond memories of the old MGM Bally's in Reno, which I guess is now the Grand Sierra. We spent a lot of time in that place, and so I have fond memories of it, you know, because of my teammates and stuff. I don't know.
Well, this is good information for you then. The Cosmopolitan just opened up 5 suites on their top floor. They're only free to players. All you have to do is deposit $1 million front money in their high limit table game area. So I bet they're pretty neat. So maybe I'm not going to do that either. All right. We have time for one more question today, and then we have bunches of questions. We're about halfway through, and so we're coming back next week and doing this all over again. So the last question is, I'll let Richard go first. How many good years do you guys feel you have left as players before calling it quits?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm pretty much retired now. I feel like if I wanted to go out and hit the road and grind, I still could, but I really don't have any desire to do that, and I don't have a need to do that. You know, I've been fortunate over the years, so, you know, I have enough where I don't have to. I definitely can't see very well anymore, so that's a limitation, but, yeah, I don't know. Will I ever completely retire 100%? Probably not. I'll probably be playing a little bit as long as I'm around.
And for me, I don't have a good estimate. Right now, I'm 7 years old, financially okay, but I no longer have the desire to squeeze every penny of EV out of every promotion the way I used to. When I was starting out, squeezing an extra 10 cents an hour out of a game was a goal. My mind is still sharp enough to do this, but every year is a little less sharp than it was the year before. I'm surprised at how much I don't remember now that back in graduate school I had essentially a photographic memory, and I don't have close to that now. Now, Las Vegas video poker are tighter than they were. And given my marriage and other responsibilities, being a road warrior isn't that attractive? So I just don't know. As long as I can do it, fine. But I am developing other hobbies and enjoying my life. It is easier to enjoy your life at 70 than it will be at 90. So I don't want to give up all the years I have left just grinding it out in the casino. So we'll see. All right. Thank you, Richard. This was fun. We're going to do it again next week. So thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.